DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Soul School Lesson 50. It's hard to believe there are 50 episodes of just Soul School. I began this in October of last year, and here we are 50 lessons later. Thank you so much for listening all this time. I wasn't even planning to do more than a few, but I got a lot of positive feedback, and people kept telling me, please do it. I enjoy this so much. One of the things I greatly enjoy is ancient wisdom literature. I enjoy it from many different religious traditions and faith traditions, and I also enjoy the Jewish scripture of Ecclesiastes and Proverbs. Those books of wisdom literature that are in the library that we call the Bible are really special books, and they have practical advice for living. Some people have read the Bible and thought of them as promises, but they are actually truisms, which when read as wisdom literature for what they are pithy sayings that if you follow them, they are generally true. When I was in graduate school, I was fortunate enough to learn under the teachings of Dr. David A. Dorsey, a renowned language scholar of ancient dead languages, especially Hebrew, ancient Hebrew. He translated 1st and 2nd Chronicles in the New Living Translation Bible, and he was just very astute at languages. It was just natural for him to study these languages, especially ancient Semitic languages. And one of the things he told us a lot of details about translation that we take for granted today. When we read the Bible in English, for instance, there's really a lot of words that translators have to guess on. There are a lot of times English words that just simply do not exist in Hebrew. Not to mention, we're talking about modern-day Hebrew, which is spoken today, but ancient Hebrew is not spoken anymore at all. And there's plenty of words that appear, and they're only in the Bible in one spot. And so there are no other places to pull from to compare other words used in other ways to understand what they mean. We sort of have to guess from the context in which they're used at what they might mean. There's a lot of guessing that goes on in translation. He also mentioned a lot of other things. When biblical translators are attempting to translate the Bible into a language such as English, when they're translating something in literal terms, the meaning might be out of context with what the better translation is. So when you translate something sort of word for word, it might not actually get at the actual meaning because it might be an idiom, for instance. So you might say something like, the tip of my tongue, you actually aren't meaning something on the tip of your tongue. You're meaning something else entirely. You're inferring something. And so sometimes the inferences of language will be not translatable. And so when you will translate them totally literally, you'll get at some other meaning altogether different. And so translators do a lot of guesswork, is what he told us. And they try very hard to stick with as close as they can to the meaning, but they're really making a lot of guesses. Not only that, but the people who publish the Bible are also under some pressures from their editors to stick with the doctrine of whoever they're publishing with. So if the meaning gets translated in a way that goes against the doctrine of those particular publishers, there's pressure from the outside to tweak that meaning a little bit. This all plays into the outcome of the final product. It doesn't mean that the entire book is changed or the entire meaning has changed, but tweaks here and there, especially if people are reading the Bible literally in English, will make a huge difference. So anytime you see somebody reading the Bible literally, hear somebody interpreting the Bible literally, and they're not interpreting it from its original language in which it was written, which is dead language, either dead Greek from the New Testament or dead Hebrew from the Old Testament, which would be very difficult to do since they're not spoken anymore, you can be sure that those interpretations that are modern are going to be off simply because we just don't speak those languages anymore. Besides those things, there are many other things to consider when translation happens. Sometimes there's just disagreements about what words mean because there's just different opinions about them. what David Dorsey did was he made some of his own translations of scriptures based on what he felt that the words truly indicated. I have his translation of Ecclesiastes, and I would like to read that for you in future episodes, because he drives at more what he feels are more exact meanings of words. They're not hugely different, but I think that Ecclesiastes is one of the most powerful books in the Bible in terms of right living. It's actually really similar to the Stoic philosophers in Greece. It's not impossible to believe that they, if it seems like they were written when they were, predate the Stoics and maybe even had an influence on them. So one of the things I'm going to share with you today, I'm going to read Proverbs 4. It's just chucked full of wisdom, stuff for our souls. The other thing I'm going to do is explain the difference between the heart and the mind as the ancients would have understood the heart and the mind. And once I do explain this, this could change how you see so many other verses in the Bible and in the wisdom literature that you read of in the ancient world. Because the heart wasn't seen the way we see the heart now. For people in the ancient Jewish world, the heart was not the seat and the center of emotions like we see now. People might say, I left my heart in San Francisco, or, oh, you have my heart. And what people are sort of indicating by that is you have a real piece of me, you have my emotions, you have my love. And the seat of emotions for people in the ancient world was the bowels or the guts, the lower part of the body. The heart, the center of the body, the part where the blood pumped, the fountain of life of a person, was the heart, but the heart was the center of the will and the control center, the core of a person. That part today we consider the mind. And so when you hear the word heart in the Bible and wisdom literature, you are hearing the control center, the main core of a person. And so one of my favorite verses is, above all else, guard your heart. For everything you do flows from it. It's this fountain of you as a person. But when people sometimes read that, they'll think, guard my heart. Yeah, I don't want to be hurt by someone. I'm going to build appropriate walls to block myself off and make sure I'm guarded so that people don't hurt me. I don't want to be hurt. Yeah, that's a great verse. That's not actually what it means at all. It actually means more of guard your mind and guard the things that will affect your decisions in the world. This is a piece of wisdom given from a proverbial father to a proverbial son. It's attributed in Proverbs from King Solomon to his son. And I'm going to read the entire chapter. It's just so full of juicy wisdom. When I read heart, you think of mind and heart mixed, this kind of core of you, the fountain of your life, the way you make all the decisions in your life, your will, your spirit, sort of the guts of you, really, but also the decision-making part of you. Dallas Willard called it the CEO of you, the command center. And so every time you hear heart in the Bible, you're thinking of a combination of heart and mind, not the emotions, because that's what would be in the Bible termed the bowels. So it's a really big difference in the ancient world. Now, the ancients knew, of course, if someone got kicked in the head by a donkey or something, they would get brain damage, and they knew that thinking happened in the brain. But they also believed that there was something about lifeblood, and the heart was the center of a person, and somehow the heart could kind of go bad in a way. You could become heartsick or have a diseased heart in a way. And this sort of manifests itself in a way in bad decision-making. It was sort of symbolic, but it kind of epitomized something going wrong. So when in the Bible it says the heart is deceitful and wicked, you know, desperately wicked, who can know it? It's not talking about this moral thing of your emotions and your temptations and, you know, you're lured and seduced in your emotions. It's actually talking about your decision-making can go really wrong. It can go really sideways. Your ability to decide and be the CEO of your life and really get your act together can go really wrong. Who can know that decision-making part? Who can know it? You can be so wayward and wrong. How can we even know ourselves? A lot of times in the Bible, we see these words righteous, wicked, good, and evil, and we attribute them with very religious language, very moral language. Plenty of times, those words are not using religious language. In wisdom literature, they most often are not using religious language. They are using wisdom language, which is talking about the right path and the wrong path. They are not talking about moral language where you're a sinner or you're a saint. And so this is the kind of thing we read to pick the correct path. It's not you're heaven-bound or hell-bound. It's different than that. Wisdom literature is to help you get through life. It's like an operating system for life. When you choose it, your life goes better, generally speaking. And when you don't choose it, your life goes worse, generally speaking. But as we see in Ecclesiastes, which I'll read later, there are no guarantees for this happy, blissful life. In Ecclesiastes, we see that the sun and the rain shine on the righteous and the unrighteous. And the righteous, of course, like I just mentioned, the righteous doesn't mean the morally God-fearing person, and the unrighteous doesn't mean the Satan-worshipping evildoer that is hellbound. It's not talking in that language, actually. It's just talking about the people who choose to do good things in life and the people who choose to not do good things. So there's a lot of interesting threads going on. It's a little more complicated than we might first assume. So as I bring out some of this wisdom literature in the next few lessons, please bear with me and soak it in as much as you can. Read it on your own. See what you find there. It's a rich treasure trove of wisdom. The reason it's still around and the reason why people still revere it is because it is so rich. It stood the test of time. I will also say that wisdom in Proverbs 4 is personified as a female. To personify wisdom as female is to give it a lot more of a richness and a story to it. And as it's personified, we can kind of get a better grasp of the gravity of this wisdom. Proverbs 4, the heading for this is Get Wisdom at Any Cost. So this is from King Solomon to his sons, attributed to King Solomon to his sons. Listen, my sons, to a father's instructions. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching. For I, too, was a son to my father, still tender and cherished by my mother. He taught me and said to me, take hold of my words with all your heart and keep my commandments, and you will live. Get wisdom and understanding, and do not forget my words or turn away from them. Do not forsake wisdom, and she will protect you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is this. Get wisdom, though it cost you all you have. Get understanding. Cherish her, and she will exalt you. Embrace her, and she will honor you. She will give you a garland to grace your head and present you with a glorious crown. Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I instruct you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction and do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life. Do not set foot on the path of the wicked or walk in the way of evildoers. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn from it and go your own way. For they cannot rest until they do evil. They are robbed of sleep till they make someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. The path of the righteous is like the morning sun, shining ever brighter till the full light of day. But the way of the wicked is like deep darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. My son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Do not let them out of your sight, and keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to one's whole body. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead and fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the plans for your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your feet from evil. Beautiful words of advice from a parent to his children, pleading really to take in all the advice of this wisdom and then have a chance for a better life. And as a parent too, I can understand that pleading, like, I have things to tell you so that you will have a better life and you won't stumble and fall and you won't get into trouble. It really hits home. A lot of the Proverbs are like that, and they're instruction to people who are willing to listen, people who are willing to follow the path of wisdom instead of the path of folly. Mostly Proverbs 4 is just about start to listen to wisdom, and then you will start to have a better kind of life. So the wayward person goes from, instead of moving straight ahead, they will veer off onto these wayward paths. There's a lot of, obviously, symbolism there. That it's not literally about going to the right or the left. It's symbolic of that represents something else. You don't want to get sidetracked from your goal and from your focus. You don't want to get sidetracked with violence and evil doing. And you want to be able to be a student and a learner for your whole life so that you can follow this call of wisdom that draws you out to better things. That will be the end of Soul School for today. The homework for Soul School is to read one of the Proverbs, maybe Proverbs 4, or maybe one of the other Proverbs, and understand that what you're reading is ancient wisdom. It's not promises that will come true. They're truisms, so they are generally true if followed, but there are exceptions, of course. And remember that heart means the fountain of your life, or the CEO, the decision-making part of your soul, of yourself. What we would consider the mind today, or a combination of the heart and mind. Jewish tradition is very, very integrated. It's very Eastern in how we see the world. It's not divided like Western thought is now. We are very divided into different spheres. You know, you have your social sphere, and you have your play life and your work life, and your mind is one thing and your body is another thing. And that is nothing at all like an Eastern way of viewing the world, where everything's very integrated. And the heart is represented in the Bible and in other writings, and other, especially ancient Eastern writings. It's represented as this fountain of your life and this fountain of your decision-making, and as Dallas Willard called it, the CEO of your soul or of your life. And so when you read heart, just remember, we're not talking about this thump, thump, thump Valentine's Day emotions. It's way deeper and more all-encompassing than that. So when you guard your heart, because it's the fountain of life, you're really guarding your mind and the decision-making parts of you and the whole fountain of life that is you. So I'll leave you with that homework. And if you enjoyed this episode, I hope that you will pass it along to someone else and rate the show on iTunes. I could really use some more ratings and reviews on iTunes. I really hope this blessed you. Thank you so much for listening. Show notes for this episode can be found at sparkmymuse.com. There you'll find details for websites and people and books mentioned in this episode, and sometimes you'll find photos and videos too. Please stop by and check it out.